Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Patriots Playbook for Thursday. It is Prediction Thursday on Patriots.com Radio. I'm John Rook. So it's time now to get all those cards and letters coming in, kids. What do you think about the game on Sunday? It's finally here, the home opener for 2014. It only took us 3 weeks to get there in the regular season. And it's the Patriots and the Oakland Raiders on Sunday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time kickoff here at Gillette. I mentioned this couple of times over the last couple of weeks, and then I think I talked a little about it yesterday, but frankly, to me, it's just a little strange getting your home opener on week 3 of the NFL season. You don't find that happening to too many folks. You certainly don't find that happening to too many teams that are considered even contenders, but maybe this is the great equalizer. Maybe this, you know, you can't really do anything about it anyway. As in typical Bill Belichick form, he would say, well, you know, can't do anything about making the schedule. We just play when they tell us to play. Nevertheless, you start two in a row on the road, and if you look at the big picture, 1-1 is not that horrible to start when you consider the success or lack thereof over the years that the Patriots have or have not had in South Florida. And we've talked about that. They bounced back enough last week to where it was a relatively vanilla yet decisive 30-7 win over an undermanned Minnesota Viking team. And now you get a chance to come back and at least try to continue some of that momentum Sunday against another undermanned team of the Oakland Raiders, who may very well be the worst team in the NFL this year out of 32. May very well be. Is there another in your estimation? You've looked at it. You probably follow other teams other than New England. Might be a question we ask Pro Football Guru Russell Baxter in hour number 2 of the program as he joins us again today, as he always does on Thursdays. Who's the worst team in the NFL right now? We talk about the best team. This weekend we'll have, you know, a Super Bowl rematch, Seattle and Denver. The guys are just talking about it on PFW, and yeah, sure, that's a great game to look forward to. If you want to watch a game that really doesn't have a whole lot of meaning toward, you know, your team, at least now, since it's still a ways before the Patriots have to face the Broncos, that's a great game. That's a good game. It'll be an interesting game. Does Denver prove anything if they win? No, other than the fact that they were better this week than Seattle. Does Seattle prove anything if they beat Denver? No, not other than they were better this week than Denver. You're not going to prove anything. It's not going to send a message. There's no such thing, I think, as statement games. They're just, you know, maybe to a small extent. But I just, statement games, oh, they could, this is a statement game. They can make a statement. Well, who are they making a statement to? To you? To the rest of the league? To players? To coaches? To who? The only people they make a statement to are themselves. And they tell themselves either A, we can play with anybody, or B, we got work to do. And I would say the team, you know, and to me, that's really how you divide the top from the bottom in the NFL. You divide them into two categories, teams that can play with anybody versus teams that have work to do. And I certainly believe strongly there are more teams in the have work to do category than in the can play with anybody category. Seattle and Denver belong in the can play with anybody category. Who else belongs there? Do the Patriots belong in that category? Yeah. Yeah, I think so. After week 1, I might not have said that. I certainly think I would have said they belong in that we've got work to do. And I'm not dismissing the Patriots for not having any more work to do, because they certainly do have a ton of work left to do. And I think you know that, and I know that, and we all know that. But the fact remains is that at least they took a step in the right direction to where now you feel a little better, to where now you realize that, yeah, you know what? Maybe week one was an anomaly more than anything else. Maybe week one was just kind of kicking, you know, the rust off. Maybe week one was the exception rather than the rule, okay? So I still think you probably put them in the can play with anybody category, but they just did, I think, go that direction this week. Who else belongs in that category through just 2 weeks in the NFL? I got to admit, I got to think about it a little bit. I'm not sure that too many other teams belong there in this stage. I think you can probably, I think you can make a case. Wow. You know what? I'm sitting here, I'm self-editing as I go. I was going to say you could probably make a case for, you can make a case for, gosh, let's see, now, I don't know. Can you make a case for someone in the AFC like Houston off to a 2-0 start? How much do we really know about this team, you know, having turned it around from the debacle from last year? See, I don't know. Can you make a case for a team like New Orleans in the NFC, who a lot of people thought would be a Super Bowl preseason favorite, and they're 0-2? You'd have to put them in the, you know, needs work category, wouldn't you? And they happen to play the Vikings this week. Or the Atlanta Falcons, a team that, you know, suffered miserably last year, thought to be a bounce back team this year. They're 1-1. They have a home game. They play tonight against Tampa. San Diego Chargers come off of a big win over Seattle last week, yet they're on the road against 2-0 Buffalo. And how about Buffalo? Are you convinced at all right now? No. No. You'd have to say have work to do, right? Have work to do. Philadelphia, you know, they came roaring from behind last week. They're 2-0, but do they have work to do, or can they play with anybody else? How about Cincinnati? That's another good AFC team. Cincinnati's 2-0. Can they play with? I would say right now, based on where we are after 2 weeks, Cincinnati probably works their way into the can play with anybody category. Just my thought. Probably just now kind of works their way into that. The Indianapolis Colts, they have a lot of work to do. They're 0-2. Who else? San Francisco 49ers, they lost last week to Chicago, a future Patriot opponent. But can San Francisco play with anybody? Probably. Carolina is 2-0. Can they play with anybody? Do they still have work to do? See, I might put Carolina in. I might put San Francisco in. So in terms of overall number of teams that belong in that upper half category, I'd say right now you're looking at about a half a dozen to eight. 6 to 8 teams maybe right now, to me, belong in that category. And the other 24 to 22 teams in the NFL belong in the have work to do slot. Fair assessment? Be curious to know what you think. This week's matchup, even though the Patriots are 1-1, they do have work to do. But can they play with anybody else? Probably. This week will go another step toward proving that. They get to play an 0-2 Raider team. And by the way, I saw a couple of really good stats this week that came from other spots. One of them came, I believe, from NFL.com. Tom Brady is in his 15th season with the Patriots, the only other NFL player to remain with the same team throughout the entire period of 15 years is Raiders kicker Sebastian Janikowski, who was selected 182 picks before Brady in the 2000 NFL draft. How about that? That's good, isn't it? That's good. That's a That's a fun fact to know and tell. The only other NFL player besides Tom in his 15th year with New England to stay with the same team throughout that same period is Oakland kicker Sebastian Janikowski. That may be the only thing these two teams have in common on Sunday. And he was taking 182 picks before Brady. Brady was at 199, so that puts him, what, at 17?
Yeah.
A first-round selection. And you'd have to say, I mean, the guy's made Pro Bowls, and he's got maybe still the strongest leg, arguably, in the NFL 15 years later. You have to say that they got mileage out of that pick. You know, we can sit here and we can go up and down the list of reasons of why Oakland is a bad team and why Oakland is the worst team in the NFL. And they may very well be. But that was one that they got right. All right, so because today is Prediction Thursday, obviously we want you to chime in with your predictions, your score prediction for Sunday's game. Fire them along at webradio at patriots.com via email, at JRBroadcaster on Twitter. You can send your scores to Facebook as well, John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E, the last name. And if you're not a friend on Facebook, submit the friend request, and we'll accept that. And then you can post on the Facebook page. You can also chat during the programs as well. And, of course, there's the old-fashioned way just by picking up the phone and getting her done. Toll-free, 855-PATS-500. 855-PATS-500. This first hour is going to be dedicated basically to taking a look at the Raiders and to talking to you with your score predictions. Of course, we haven't had any winners in the first 2 weeks. Thought we might get one last week, but, you know, 30-7 was not selected last week. So the same thing goes this week as well. Any correct scores that get emailed or tweeted or called in to us this week before the kickoff, any correct scores qualify to win a Patriots yearbook for 2014, the Patriots yearbook slash media guide. Just as we gave away last year, we're giving it away this year. So if you're uninitiated to Prediction Thursdays, this is how you can play. You just got to fire off a score. Now, the other thing I would ask you in conjunction with your score prediction is, in your estimation, are the Oakland Raiders the worst team in the NFL? And if so, why? What one thing, just give me one, you can give me several if you like, but what one thing do you believe makes Oakland the worst football team in the NFL? I tell you what, I have to admit, in my own estimation, it's the Al Davis hangover. I know, I think that, you know, while he was still with us, that organization was probably a little bit scared to move on. He might not have even allowed the organization to move on and try and do other things. I thought that, you know, some of the things with their coaches and their coaching staff for the last few years have been an absolute joke and abominable. You know, coaches striking other coaches, coaches not having a clue, Lane Kiffin. I mean, come on, really? So all of these moves that have been made have just been, it just signals to me a haphazard attitude that is not befitting of a professional football franchise. And a once proud franchise. I mean, think about it. Franchise that has won Super Bowls, that has won championships, they won AFL championships, they've been to Super Bowls, they've won divisions. I mean, Silver and Black Attack, I mean, they've got as much old school history as any franchise in the NFL, and that goes with saying the same thing for Green Bay. Green Bay is about as old school as it gets in the NFL. The Washington Redskins are the same kind of way. The Dallas Cowboys are kind of the same way. You can probably throw the San Francisco 49ers. You can throw the New York Giants in there. You can even throw a little bit of the old Baltimore Colts. The Oakland Raiders are part of the, I mean, even when Oakland moved to Los Angeles and then moved back to Oakland 20 years ago or so, when they were the L.A. Raiders, it just didn't seem right. And, of course, in this last offseason, there were more rumors about Oakland potentially looking for another stadium deal. And if they don't get it, that Los Angeles, again, unbelievable as it sounds, could be another place for them to move to. Or, strange as it may sound to you, San Antonio, Texas. And again, allegedly, San Antonio city leaders met with the Davis family about the potential for their interest in the Alamo City if they decide they want to move that franchise. Now, you know, that's fine and good. If an owner feels like he can make more money elsewhere, I think that the owner of the franchise has a right to certainly consider it. But in this particular instance, because the NFL is it's a private entity, and we talked all about this yesterday in terms of the legal aspects that hit the NFL, and I'm gonna mention that again here in just a little bit with another story today. But fact of the matter is that I think sometimes you have to realize what the greater good is for here. And sometimes we think, oh, it just wouldn't be the NFL without the Oakland Raiders. And I kind of tend to agree with that. But if Oakland and the Raiders, if the Raiders aren't supported by Oakland because the fans are sick, and we were just talking about, you know, at the tail end of PFW, you know, why do fans get angry? Should fans have a right to be angry at their team? And I think if fans have a monetary investment, and let's just say whether it's legal or otherwise, then I think depending on the extent of that monetary investment, yeah, you probably have a right to be upset. Angry? I think fans that have a right to be angry are fans that continue to put forward their best financial foot and yet don't see any sort of positive reaction from that team. Oakland could certainly be used as an example of this category, which is why I'm sure, and I was not privy to a lot of the previous conversation today on PFW, but I'm sure that's probably how it started. If you're an Oakland Raider fan, are you angry at your team? Are you angry at your organization? Would you care if they left? And so in this regard, that's how these things happen. It's really kind of how the Colts left Baltimore. Baltimore didn't want to support, the Colts organization or the ownership anymore. They didn't want to support the Irsays. They felt like they could make more money. There was a better, the carrot and the stick was being dangled out in Indianapolis. That may be happening in San Antonio. And, you know, having come from San Antonio, working, you know, for the Spurs there for 6 years and television and radio in San Antonio for a while before I moved to New England in 1988, I have to admit, that would be an unbelievable occurrence, one that certainly, you know, 25 years ago, no one thought would happen. And of course, they go and they build the Alamo Dome and David Robinson plays in that. And they never really had a football team to call the Alamo Dome home until, wow, just 2, 3, 4 years ago. They finally started Division I college football with UT San Antonio. And now that's their home field. And yet the old Alamo Dome is now out of date, sad as it sounds, but it's true. Facility's about 20 years old. There would be, I think, thousands in South Central Texas who would support that football team. I do think, though, that if push came to shove, that the Houston Texans and probably more so the Dallas Cowboys would have something to say about that, because San Antonio has always been Dallas Cowboy country, even though technically I believe Houston is in San Antonio's jurisdiction or vice versa. In other words, that's part of their marketing territory, if you will. So there'd have to be some make goods done there, and I'm sure Dallas and Houston would have a big say in the entire situation. Well, it's neither here nor there now, but I understand why fans would get upset. What would it take as a Patriots fan as well for you to be upset, angry at your team? What would it take for you to be angry at your team? If you're a Minnesota Vikings fan, are you angry at the Vikings in their way that they've handled the whole Adrian Peterson case? Are you angry if you're a Baltimore Ravens fan because of their handling or slow-to-handle situation of the Ray Rice story? What about if you're a Carolina Panther fan? Are you angry at the way that they certainly seem to wait before other teams move before they did in suspending Greg Hardy? And how about the case of Arizona Cardinal running back Jonathan Dwyer, as I mentioned just a little bit ago? This is the new one that's out today. If you have heard, bear with me. I won't spend a lot of time on it. But Cardinals running back Jonathan Dwyer headbutted his wife, broke her nose after she bit his lip to stop his sexual advances. And then he punched her in the face the next day. This is all according to a police report that was made public earlier today. Then he later threatened to kill himself in front of her and their 17-month-old if she called the police. Dwyer was arrested yesterday. He was benched, suspended by the team yesterday, late yesterday after we were done with the program here. I have a whole additional thought process on, you know, these suspensions and this unbelievable violent perfect storm that is befalling on the NFL at this stage of the game, and I'll get to it in a moment. But are you angry? Are you upset with the Arizona Cardinals if you're a Cardinal fan? I don't know how you really could be, other than the fact that you picked up a guy like Dwyer to begin with, because they did exactly what now other teams are showing this is what you should do. Get him out. Suspend him. Get him out. And that's what they're doing. And that's what they've done in this particular instance. But would that make you angry? What else would make you angry if you're a Patriots fan? All right, webradio@patriots.com. That's the email address, so you've got a score prediction to get to. I want to know, as a Patriots fan, what would the Patriots have to do to make you angry at them? And are the Oakland Raiders the worst team in the NFL? If so, why do you think that is? You got plenty to chew on today. 855-PATS-500. Kevin had to step out of the studio for a moment, so if you've been trying to call, I apologize. There's nobody to answer the phone. So just hang on for a moment, or just keep ringing, and believe me, as soon as he steps in, he'll see the phones light up like a Christmas tree, and he'll get to your call. But you can also email webradio@patriots.com. Yes, you can hit me up instantly on Twitter, @JRBroadcaster on Twitter. And if you're a friend on Facebook, fire away. I'll see it right away. John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E, on Facebook. Friend request coming in right now. Boom. Done. All right, a couple of other things that I want to get to, and then I promise you we'll get to the phones here as soon as we can. Some of the software in answering the phones has also failed us here today, so we have to wait for them to reestablish contact with the server. I apologize. Just keep them coming, keep them coming. As soon as Kevin gets in, we'll take care of it. All right. Couple of other things about the Raiders, and along the lines of, you know, do you think the Raiders are the worst team in the NFL? I'm going to credit some of these numbers to NFL.com that I read on, and I'll credit some of these numbers as well to ESPNBoston.com, where I saw earlier this week. They've done a good job of compiling some numbers, which I think are pertinent to our conversation today. So we'll give credit where credit is due. You know, to me, when it comes down to thinking New England versus Oakland, I think of one game, and I think of one game only. Yeah, see, all together now. Snow Bowl, right? I think it's obvious that, you know, you think of that, because that's probably that, and I'd have to say maybe the 76 game. Ben Dreith allegedly, you know, screwed the Patriots with his call, his hit on Stabler. But I think for more a modern fan, I think more of a present-day fan, certainly the 2001 game has got to stand out, the Snow Bowl game. Or, yeah, 2001 game. And if that's the case, since that point in time, and I love this number, having looked at this earlier this week, since that point in time, it's been almost 4,700 days since the Snow Bowl game between the two teams. And since that time, the Patriots have a record of 148 wins and 46 losses, while the Raiders have gone 64-130. And yet the Raiders also have a Super Bowl title in that run as well. Patriots have had 12 winning seasons, the Raiders won. Patriots have had 2 starting quarterbacks, the Raiders have had 18! Holy cow! 18 starting quarterbacks since the Snow Bowl. And here's the other one, I think, that probably tells you why the teams have traveled in their respective directions. Patriots have had one head coach. The Raiders have had seven. Seven head coaches, 18 quarterbacks since the snowball game. All right, Kevin's back now, so be patient. Phones have been going off the hook, Kev. I'm sorry. It's because sometimes I open up my big mouth and say things. The other number that stood out and that we talked a little about yesterday with Eric, but the streak is 14 for the Raiders. 14 straight day games in the Eastern time zone that the Raiders have lost. That's the sixth longest streak in the Super Bowl era. Now, believe it or not, this is the one that I found that's kind of fascinating. The Tennessee Titans / Houston Oilers franchise, they own the longest streak in the Eastern time zone. They lost 30 in a row from 1981 to 1987 playing in the Eastern time zone. And that was with, keep in mind now, that was with Earl Campbell still as a running back for those Houston Oilers. Sometimes for teams that are in the west of the Mississippi River, it is tough to come east. I don't know why that is. But it is. Maybe it's because of the travel. Maybe it's just because of the thought process. Maybe it's because, you know, you lose the hour, and so it's just a mental thing. I don't know. That's pretty incredible. Pretty incredible. So, anyway, that kind of shows you the direction of the two teams. There's a reason that the Raiders are only 64-130 since the snowball. Seven coaches, 18 quarterbacks. No stability, no rhyme, no reason, no building. Different philosophies, and what's the one constant during that time? Ownership? Yeah, kinda. Yeah, kinda. So for Raiders fans, if you say you're angry at the Davis family for being in charge and not being able to be progressive, perhaps, I can understand your anger. That, I think, in that particular instance, if you are a season ticket holder and you continue to fork that money out, then obviously you're a great big football fan, but you're also a masochist. Why are you inflicting this pain upon yourself? You do because you love football? Fine. You do because you've gone back with the Raiders since the old days of Just Win, Baby? Okay. Maybe you've just been a Raiders fan for so long, you know, your family's grown up with it. I also understand that. My family and I, myself, we grew up with the Dallas Cowboys back in the heyday of Roger Staubach and Craig Morton and Bob Lilly and Chuck Howley and, you know, Calvin Hill and Robert Newhouse. God rest his soul. He just passed away recently. You know, that was the era that I grew up in, when Tom Landry was the hat. He was the coach. He was the man. He and Chuck Knoll. George Allen. Those were the guys that really helped establish and add to the foundation that is the NFL today. Big. Big time. So if you go that far back, then I can understand why your hurt is. But if you really haven't been a Raider fan for more than, say, 20 years, I said we could probably go back 20 years. You can probably go back, let's see, they didn't win the Super Bowl. They lost the Super Bowl to Tampa Bay about 10 years ago, I guess? I'm just thinking off the top of my head without looking at it online here. So, but they were in a Super Bowl. That was their one winning season in the last, 12? I believe that was the one. So, in that particular instance, I guess you probably have to be a Raider fan of 20 years or longer to really, in my estimation, have a right to be angry, because you've seen no real change of direction. All you've seen is coaches and quarterbacks go in through a revolving door, and there's been no rhyme or reason. Maybe it's because the ownership doesn't want to pay for it. Maybe it's because the ownership doesn't think you want to accept it. Maybe it's because the ownership is behind in the times and they haven't adjusted to the modern day ways of the 21st century in the NFL. Who knows? It could be a little bit of all of the above. So this kind of goes along the same lines with why you think, if you think Oakland is the worst team in the NFL, why you think they are. And if there's another team, love to hear from you on it. All right. 855-PATS-500. Phone lines are open. Kevin's in the studio. Webradio at Patriots.com. Started off with Rich in New Jersey. Rich, you're in the playbook. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Great, Rich.
You asked what the Patriots could do to make you unhappy, right?
Yeah.
I feel that they haven't put anyone there for Brady for years to catch the ball.
Okay. So you feel like their evaluation process or chintziness at bringing in wide receivers makes you angry?
Well, it doesn't make me angry, but, I mean, there's guys that were available at times that they could have gotten to kind of stretch the field, but they've never had that since Randy Moss.
You know what? I won't argue that. You're 110% correct. But I would tell you that this is a simple case of, I think, personnel evaluation, and they just didn't evaluate based on, I would say they evaluated based on one thing and one thing only, and you know what that is, Rich.
What's that?
Money.
Money, yeah.
Okay.
All right, I can see that.
So, you know, they're not going out and getting some of these names that you speak of for one reason only. Money. Because these guys can command a salary that they, A, don't want to afford, B, don't feel is worth their affording. The Patriots, and this is one of the reasons why the Patriots have been as successful as they have been over the last decade plus now, and you know this, it's because they have established a value, a worth to a particular position on the field, and they try to stay within the confines of that, recognizing that there can be some, I think, can be some exceptions made for exceptional players. But they, in their eyes, haven't seen an exceptional player.
Yeah.
Now, if you could tell me that Larry Fitzgerald was available, and Larry Fitzgerald would agree to sign a long-term deal, and Larry Fitzgerald would then be worth it over the long haul, and the Patriots still say no, okay, I can understand why you'd be upset, because I'd be upset right there with you.
Yes, it's true. I understand that.
Okay, so all I'm saying is that the Patriots' monetary formula, whether you really like it or not, it really has helped them more than it has failed them. They definitely have what I would call an above 500 record with that. Is that fair to say?
True. But you also have a guy like Aaron Dobson who hasn't been on the field, hasn't practiced all training camp, and then you got a guy like Kembell Tompkins who is your number one or your number two target.
Absolutely. Yeah.
No, free agent.
You're absolutely right. And again, that boils down to, I think, identifying talent. And yeah, and certainly GM Bill Belichick has a right to be scrutinized for that. And yeah. Those that say, hey, we need to hire a GM, that Bill should just stick to coaching, I can see your argument. But, I mean, when you look at the big picture, and the big picture to me is playoff relevancy every year, as opposed to taking a downside and having to go 4-12 for a year or two before you build back up. This team is in the mix every year.
Yeah, since 2001, I think they've been the most winningest team.
So you understand why I say the big picture? That is the biggest picture there is, and it's hard to argue against that. And so whatever they deem is part of getting to that big picture, you kind of got to give them the benefit of the doubt on that one.
It's true. I just feel like everything is just value, 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 but then you don't have that talent that you need.
Well, Rich, I would argue that the system in the NFL these days has forced the Patriots to look for value players because of one thing, and that's the salary cap.
Money, yes.
And again, we're going right back to the money factor. So if you want to put a bunch of bucks in the hands of, say, a Larry Fitzgerald type of player, okay, let's do that. Then what do you do? Then what do you do when you have injuries and you really need help at linebacker and you can't afford to even go out and hire street free agents because you don't have anything to pay them with because you're over the cap?
Yes, I can see that.
So all I'm saying is be careful what you ask for.
All righty.
Good stuff, Rich. Thank you for the phone call. Appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you.
You got it. Let's stay in New Jersey. Kareem is in New Jersey. You're in the playbook, Kareem.
Hey, John. How are you, buddy?
I'm good, buddy. How's it going?
Very good. This is becoming the best thing during the NFL season, man, to listen to you and really getting close to the team and the insights and all the opinions. Highly appreciate the show. Highly appreciate you and all the tweets and the followbacks and all that. Thanks.
Thanks, buddy. I sure appreciate that.
Yeah, New Jersey, man. Rough to be a Patriots fan here between the Giants and the Jets and the Eagles and yeah, man, it's rough. But you know what? Proud to be one.
Oh, good. See? All right. You stand out in the crowd. You'd rather be, you don't want to be a follower. You want to be a leader.
Absolutely. Here's my prediction. I'm going to go through that first. I'm going to answer you a couple questions real quick.
Go.
Here's my prediction. I broke it down too. I'm going with 50-13 Patriots.
Woo! Okay? You're going to put the 50 burger on them, huh?
Sir, I'm ready. I'm ready. You know why? Here it is. I'm going to get, 7 by the defense. I got 2, field goals, 6. And I got 5 touchdowns for you today.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
5 touchdowns. That makes 35 plus 13. And then I'm going to give you a safety. That makes it a 50.
Wow.
That's breaking it down right there.
As Barry Switzer used to say, we're going to hang half a 100 on them. Wow.
I'm ready. And the reason why, this is the home opener, man. Let me tell you, I was down the first week. I'm not going to lie. I was down last week, even though it was a win. We all were not really 100% happy. As you saw, Tom Brady wasn't happy.
Yeah.
The performance is not as up to par. And as I said to you, we have high expectations being Patriots fans. You know, the organization is flawless. I want to say that. I know it's a big word, but I think, honestly, not because I'm a fan, I think we are a great organization. And not just for football. I think, and this is, you read this before probably, other soccer teams in Europe and all over the world, listen to Robert Kraft, see what he, like, try to figure out what does he do to have such a successful, organization. So, I'm bearing my patience here. I'm ready. I'm ready to see a big home opener. I'm really counting on that.
Okay. Fair enough.
So, whether the Raiders are the worst team of NFL is too hard to tell, too early to tell. It's too early to tell if we are the best or not. It's too early to tell if we're the bad or, you know, if we're bad or not.
Mm-hmm.
So, looking at the record, I definitely can see how the Raiders is one of the worst teams in NFL. But again, not going back too long, we were fighting the Raiders over a Super Bowl. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah.
You can't say that. I mean, it's too early. I mean, hey, again, I'm living in a territory where I see Giants fans right now wearing the Rangers hat waiting for the hockey to start. Let me put it that way. True story, buddy, and I'm very happy. It doesn't make me any happier than seeing Ranger hats on right now.
I'm lucky. So, that's good. I like it.
You don't really know till in a little bit during the season.
Sure.
Everybody is rising. Everybody's performing better. I'm not going to be harsh on Aaron Dobson or Tom Brady. I mean, Aaron Dobson coming from a foot injury. There's a lot of work to be done. Gronkowski is gonna get better. He's already better. You know what I mean? Just give him time. Let's give these guys time. I keep just sitting with myself. I'm like, these are not the Patriots. But you know what? Time.
Yeah.
Time will tell. And that's it. That's all I got for now, and
okay.
I'll be on again.
Thanks, Kareem. Sounds like a plan, buddy. Thank you for the phone call. Greatly appreciated. Good stuff. All right. That's Kareem in New Jersey. Here's Andy in Vermont. Andy, you're in the playbook.
Hey, John. Like I said last week, I think Patriots really, really did well playing in Minnesota. The climate was very similar, and I think the defense really opened up compared to the week before.
Mm-hmm.
I was really impressed with the guys doing more solo tackling, a lot less of that 2, 3, 4 guys on a guy just to get him down. Peterson not being there definitely just opened it up.
Mm-hmm.
I still say that Cannon is not the answer at guard on the left side.
Okay.
I wish we had Logan Mankins. A lot of offensive, a lot of things on offense have to happen. I think Brady should concentrate more on the 10 and 15 yard gains and short slot passes and stuff like that. And I think just to move the ball up the field, they struggled again. As far as teams being the worst, too early to tell, but you know, Tampa Bay isn't doing all that great.
That's true. They're 0-2, and they lost both games at home.
And still in Florida, the Jaguars aren't doing that great.
Right.
And so it's too early to tell. I mean, you have the best of the best. If the Raiders were going to relocate, you know, San Antonio might not be bad, but when is it going to happen that a team moves to the UK or something happens?
You know, that will happen, I think, in our lifetime, Andy. I don't know how old you are, but I'm in my mid-50s, and I have to tell you, I think that will happen in my lifetime. I think we will see a foreign franchise. And whether or not, you know, I think London is more likely. I also think Toronto is a distinct possibility, even though the new owner of the Bills has said he's keeping Buffalo right there in Buffalo. And I'm glad to hear that, because that's, you know, that's a foundation franchise, not just for the NFL, but for the old AFL. They have to keep the old AFL, I think, the old AFL guard intact, and the Patriots are a part of that. Because that's part of who the NFL is right now. And Oakland is a part of that, too. Let me also add that. Oakland's definitely a part of that, which is why it pained me a great deal 20 years ago to have them go off to Los Angeles to fill the bill when the Rams left for St. Louis originally. And it just never felt like they were the Raiders, you know? It just never felt like it. And then they ended up moving back to Oakland, which was silly again in the same place. But they ended up going back. It is, however, eventually up to the Bay Area to support that football team, and more specifically, the Oakland half of the Bay Area to support that football team. And if they can't do it, then this is what happens. They will move. They will move. And, you know, and eventually we'll all get over it, and we'll all get used to the L.A. Raiders or the San Antonio Raiders or the Buffalo Raiders, I mean, the Toronto Raiders, or we'll get used to it. I mean, it'll be weird. We'll get used to it. Hey, we got used to the Utah Jazz, didn't we, in the NBA?
Yeah.
And that's the biggest misnomer, I think, in all of sports.
Well, Florida has several teams, Texas, West Coast, California, several. You know, Toronto, if people are for it, you know, not being really stepping on the toes of the CFL, you know, I can see it happening.
I think it'll happen eventually in Toronto, but I also think that London will probably be first. I would tell you that London is most likely going to be designated an AFC East team, which means that, you know, trips to London may be in the Patriots' future.
Tons of fans over in Europe,
yep,
in general.
Yep.
And they will flock just to see a game. We've seen it, you know, last year. Just like Revis shut down Greg Jennings last year.
Sure.
Jennings had two touchdowns over the UK when they played against Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. I think that's a great possibility.
We have a huge UK fan base. We really do. And we get 8 to 10 to 12 guys that come in for a game every year, and they always stop by here at Patriots Radio and visit with us. And, you know, they're a knowledgeable bunch. They're good guys. I would wonder if London did get its own franchise, would they stop rooting for the Patriots?
No, not necessarily. You get fans, different teams. People move. They don't necessarily stay in the country. I mean, it'd be something if we started seeing football done in American football done in Ecuador or South America or something like that.
I don't know. We may be a ways away from that, but I think Great Britain and I think Canada are the two logical spots. You might even see someday an expansion into a place like Mexico City, because the Cowboys have had some preseason success down there, and they are wildly popular south of the border. I think that's a real possibility at some point. I don't think we're there yet, but at some point, globally, we could see that. But I think that a move somewhere internationally is going to happen before you and I are long done with this.
I think you're right. North of, you know, I think North America definitely, whether it's parts of Canada, you know, Vancouver could have something. Who knows? But the UK definitely. Well, I appreciate your time, John.
Thanks, Andy.
We'll call in again.
Did you give me a score prediction?
I think if the defense plays as well as they did last week, and I'm not really counting on the offense as much, but I'm hoping the offense is the chemistry is a little better on the line and everybody else. I could see, you know, 40 to 10 or something like that.
40 to 10. You're in. Thanks, Andy.
Thank you.
You got it. All right. Here's our good buddy Eldridge in North Carolina. Hey, Eldridge.
Hey, John. How you doing today, man?
Good, pal.
Okay, good. I don't think the Raiders are the worst team. Like you said, the problem with them was Al Davis. If you left some of the coaches alone and some, you know, and quit picking the players that he wanted, you know, said what the team needed, like Mr. Beal, might be all right.
Right.
The franchise might be all right.
Okay.
I think John Madden was the most successful coach he had there.
No question. And, now, let's also throw Tom Flores in there. You know, and Bob Sosi had Coach Flores on his show yesterday because he's a part of the Raiders radio network, and I'm sure that he probably cringes when moves are made and when players screw up. And, you know, being an old coach, I'll wager that, you know, his analysis of the football team is probably pretty good.
Yes. But my question is, why wouldn't the Davis family, like Tom Flores, he's not that old. He still got that knowledge. Why not use him as a consultant or whatever instead of going to people they got? Because
maybe they should.
The Raiders, they had the talent for years.
The Raiders keep trying to seem to do it with an infusion of youth, you know, in their front office. I don't know that that's necessarily the case. I think sometimes having a little savvy and having a little smarts and having some experience is a good thing.
It's a good thing. I do, too.
But yeah. I think they go for the youth because I think they're trying to go on the cheap. That's just the way I see it.
Well, and they did wrong on that one.
Yep.
Now, my biggest beef with the Patriots, what makes me mad, okay, I'm like that first caller, because for years, I don't care if I keep saying Brady and Manning. Yes, Manning always had his Corvettes, but Brady had his Tucker toy.
Mm-hmm.
He always had them. Tight end receiver, you can go back, it's Harrison, Wayne, Garcon, you know, the other guy that we had that he got hurt and then went back. And then Brady, the best wide receiver besides giving them that they got him to the Super Bowl, I got to put them in there. But the best talent wide receiver was 07.
Yep.
07.
Yep.
And then Bill for being a defensive-minded coach. Why you keep getting scrubs instead of the people that you need?
Mm-hmm.
That's the part that I can understand. Especially in the secondary. You come from the Giants with Bill Parcells. And I go down saying, we won the Super Bowl with Parcells guys. Bill had a couple guys, twinkle here and twinkle there.
Mm-hmm.
But George, that roster was Bill Parcells. And even Parcells said, with Drew, that's why he got Terry Gwynn. I need a Porsche in the driveway.
Mm-hmm.
And to see, and I don't know why Belichick don't think like that. You know, yeah, it's all right to try to do with folks. And I understand what you're saying. We're in the playoffs every year. I love that too. We're in the dance every year. But you're coming up short. You're the girl to ask to the prom, but there'll be a prom queen. That's the part that I have a problem.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. What about a score prediction, Eldridge?
I'm going 28-7. I don't think we fixed that offense yet. And okay. I don't think Brady comfortable yet.
Okay.
That's what I'm going with.
I think that's a fair assessment. 28-7.
All right. Mr. John, you have a good one, sir.
Thanks, Eldridge. Appreciate that. All right. Let's knock out some Facebook posts here. Sean on Facebook says, John, my prediction for Sunday's game is 45-10. I think the strategy will be similar to last week's game against the Vikings. I think they'll try to run the ball, but I think they will also try to get the passing game going a bit and trying to work in the other receivers. I think the defense will have another strong game as well. And in regards to your question, I think the reason why the Raiders have been so bad would have to be the head coaching situation and the lack of consistency in that position. No doubt. I mentioned that. 7 head coaches since the Snow Bowl game with the Patriots. Plus the bad player decision that Al Davis made before he passed away. An example of that is Jamarcus Russell. Okay. That's good stuff, Sean. Jay also posts on Facebook. He says, Rook, prediction Thursday. Hashtag prediction Thursday. We need to get that one going too, Kev. Just like hashtag nitpick Tuesday, we need hashtag prediction Thursday. And I think next week, next Wednesday, Kev, I think we should hold a contest for a Wednesday name. What do you think? Maybe we can give away a yearbook to the one we pick? He's shaking his head. Yes, 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 yes.
No, I think we could do that. I'm just trying. I was rolling around in my head what kind of goes with Wednesday, the W theme.
Yeah, a little alliteration or something like that going on. I was thinking of that in the shower this morning. I know. You think of all these crazy things in the shower. That was the thing that I was thinking of. We got Nitpick Tuesday. And I said, well, you know, we got prediction Thursday, even though there's no alliteration there, but that's what we do on Thursdays. We give our prediction for Sunday. So, and we've been doing this for 14 years.
What John Rook thinks about in the shower.
No.
Apparently that's what this program's turning into.
Yeah, it could. But nobody's interested.
I don't think we want to go down that road.
No, nobody's interested. Nobody's interested. Maybe except Miss Robin. Ba-dum-tsh. Okay, there you go. Thank you very
Maybe
much.
Maybe cat in Chicago. You never know. She could be into older men.
No. Oh, ow. 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 Oh, let me take that. Yeah. Well, let me take that out of my back. There you go. Thank you. Yeah, so we'll do that next week. Okay. I'm digressing, as I like to do in this show. Jose says on Facebook, Rook, my main man. You got to love it when he calls you the main man. That means I'm the main man. Not just the man. I'm the main man. Thank you, Jose. And he's in Uvalde, Texas. Yes, Uvalde. My prediction for Sunday's Pats go up 42-10. Brady gets the other wide receivers involved due to bad distribution of the ball last week. Okay, good. So he says 42-10. That works. Thank you, Jose. That's excellent. Let's see. Jay says, prediction Thursday, as I started to go on before I digressed, I'm hashtag prediction Thursday. 33-13, Pats take it. Defense wins again. 4 sacks, 2 pick sixes. 2 pick sixes, Jay says. Nice. Okay. Good. Keep them coming. Keep them coming. Linden, just Facebook, you said, hashtag WTH Wednesday. What the hell Wednesday?
I think our friend Big Matt might have the best one.
Yeah?
Wookie Wednesday.
Wookie Wednesday. Wookie Wednesday. I like it. That's right. We started that a little bit last year, didn't we? Wookie, well, all right. We're going to bring
that's,
we'll
that's
revisit.
The leader in the clubhouse.
That might have
so
to
far.
The leader in the clubhouse, Wookie Wednesday. Oh, my goodness. All right, we will revisit this next Wednesday, okay, kids? Right now, the goal is to try to win the yearbook for this week with a score prediction. This is, where are we? Oh, Mac on Facebook says, John, for the first time in a long time, I'm listening live. Thank you, Mac. If the Pats traded Brady, that would make me irate. Yeah, that's true. One of the questions I asked was, is there something the Patriots could do that would actually make you angry? Trading Brady? Yeah, that'd be a good start. When he's finished, they should retire his jersey and promote him to the front office or on the coaching staff if he wants it. And he says, my score prediction, 30-3, Pats win. Mary Beth also says on Facebook, she says, score prediction, 31-7, Pats, with more of the Chandler Jones show this week. I like that one, Mary Beth. Chandler Jones, of course, was the AFC Defensive Player of the Week this week for his performance last week in the win over Minnesota. Be nice to see him continue that trend this week. I'm not sure how to pronounce this. Mati from British Columbia. John, I think the best place the NFL could expand to is Vancouver. It's very nice here. And my prediction is Pats 42, Raiders 6. Thank you. And let me know how to pronounce your name, Mati. It's M-A-T-E-J. I'd like to be able to get that right and not keep butchering it. So if you're online, send it to me, and we'll make sure that we make the correction there. Let me jump in with a couple of emails here as well before we sit down with Pro Football Guru. David says, Pats win 31-0. Steve in Killeen, Texas. Ugh. Now, how does that happen, Kev? I just clicked on the email, and it came up, and then all of a sudden it went, you got to log me back in, buddy. So I don't know how the hell that happened. I've never seen that happen. I'm already in, and then it all of a sudden unlogs itself. All right, let's go ahead and take the time out here since we're at the top of the hour, and then what we'll do is when
I'll
we come
back. Log you back in.
Yeah. You'll do what? You'll
log you back in.
Log me back in. I know. How does that happen? I hit the email, and it's right there in front of me. All of a sudden, it unlogs itself.
Stephen Killeen's emails must have this this timer on it, and after an hour, it self-destructs.
Oh, is that a criticism? That it takes me an hour to get to the email?
Maybe he sends it, and it's such a hot take. He's like, I don't want this getting stolen by the next show. So after an hour, it just self-destructs.
Okay, I got it. All right. Good try. Hour number two coming up, Russell Baxter around week 3 in the NFL and more of your score predictions, calls, cards, letters, emails, tweets. Let's go in the playbook.
We're NRG, and we're a new kind of energy company, one that's hard at work making the most of renewable sources of energy, one whose solar energy is helping power football stadiums across the country, one that's developing new technologies that can one day turn your home into its own source of power and put you in charge of how you use it. We're putting that power into your hands. NRG, the power to change life.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, And before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time. 2% cash back on groceries and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or tri-corner hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of Domino's. The success of the sleeveless hoodie, 3 Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
The Patriots and Revolution Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, and much more, including Pro Shop exclusives and sideline gear from Adidas, Nike, and New Era. The Pro Shop is located next to Gillette Stadium and is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at PatriotsProShop.com. The Patriots and Revolution Pro Shop, your team, your store.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go, go. That's it. Come on, kick it in hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call star NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Want to be a Patriots season ticket holder? Join the Patriots season ticket holder waitlist and get in the game. Be first in line to purchase Patriots season tickets as they become available and receive exclusive access to the Patriots ticket exchange and other amenities such as access to playoff tickets, Gillette Stadium concert pre-sales, and much more. Get on the list. Get in the game. Visit patriots.com/the list to join today.
Xbox One is not only a game console, but the home entertainment system every fantasy football fan needs. The NFL on Xbox One is your connection to all things fantasy, giving you personalized news, highlights, stats, and scores instantly on your TV. Watching your favorite team play on Sunday, but wondering how your fantasy players are doing? With built-in fantasy football, track your updates on TV in real time across NFL.com and multiple fantasy leagues, all while still watching live games. Xbox One, bringing fantasy football to life. Now available for $3.99
at a Microsoft store near you.
The Patriots and Revolution Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, and much more, including Pro Shop exclusives and sideline gear from Adidas, Nike, and New Era. The Pro Shop is located next to Gillette Stadium and is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at PatriotsProShop.com. The Patriots and Revolution Pro Shop, your team, your store.
Good afternoon. My name is Russell, and I am a wilderness explorer in Tribe 54, Sweat Lodge 12. Are you in need of any assistance today, sir?
It's time to go around the NFL with football guru Russell Baxter on Patriots Playbook.
The one and only Russell Baxter. I got to hit the on button first, Kev. I need to remember that. Radio 101.
You're a junior broadcaster, not a senior broadcaster.
That's true. That's true. The button has to go from red to green in this particular instance, and I failed to do that. The one and only.
Are you getting colorblind in your old age?
Wow, that's two old jokes today. Damn. I probably asked for that since we were talking about the AFL for a little while, short while today. As I mentioned, someone else who joins me in the near senior citizen department, Russell S. Baxter, pro football guru. Good morning, Russell, or good afternoon, as the case may be.
I'm just curious, is the Russell that is introduced on this segment, on the audio there, is he on the scout team?
That's a good question. He might be, by now, anyway. You know, that's a good question. We'll have to do a little research on that.
They expanded the practice squads to 10, so I figured he had to make it. I think he'd make a pretty dandy nose tackle.
He keeps coming back every week, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. Never gets old.
Never gets old. That's right. That would be NGO. Hashtag NGO.
Opposed to Kevin's views on both me and you, apparently, today.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Kevin's rubbing it in today. You know, you'd have to just, take into consideration his, challenge with the follicles upstairs, and then you probably can understand why he takes the shots there.
Well, you really went bald there, didn't you?
Yeah.
I just look at the fact that no merit badge for you, Kevin.
No soup for you. That's exactly
right. I used to work around the corner from the guy who was the episode was based.
Oh, yeah. That's right. The guy Right, Columbus. Okay, Columbus Circle. Yes.
Third Street, somewhere in there. It was never open when I was up there working for one summer and so on. But I found myself looking to see if it was open every day.
Well, he actually, I know that store in New York actually closed down, and they did. They moved it. Now I don't know if the place that they moved it to is actually still open or not. But from what I understand, there were several offshoots. I don't know if he franchised or what, but there were offshoots of the original, and they didn't call it Soup Nazi, but that's what they called him on the show, the TV show.
Yeah, I'm going back the ways. I'm talking like the summer of 96. Kevin, by the way, that's 1996, not 1896, okay?
Wow. Appreciate it.
Wow.
I was 10 years old.
That's something we really didn't need to know. Okay. All right. Good thing that we kind of start out with that digression. What were your thoughts kind of looking back at week two just a little bit on the way that New England at least seemed to pick themselves up a bit, but they still struggle overall on offense? And especially the big thing this week, Russell, has been, Tom Brady targeting guys like Edelman and Gronkowski too much and not spreading the ball around enough.
Well, listen, think about what happened in these 2 week span with the Patriots. They're up 20-10 at the half.
Yeah.
They then wind up, if you conclude the second half against Miami,
mm-hmm.
and then the first quarter against Minnesota, they wind up giving up 30 unanswered points. 23 to the Dolphins, and then they get down 7-0 to Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
So then they respond with 30 unanswered points of their own. So I don't know if I'm watching the Patriots or the Celtics right now. But to be honest with you, that's been the NFL the first 2 weeks of the season. Okay? We had another week where teams were blowing double-digit leads again.
Right.
And not bad teams. San Francisco at home
Indianapolis at home. The Jets on the road. Okay? I mean, I don't know what I can't. I don't know what to make of it, but it's not just one team. I've been seeing it throughout the league. It's like this run. You know, teams go on runs now. But I think the Pats did what they had to do last week. Obviously, there was a little curveball thrown at the end with Adrian Peterson not playing, and so on. But I don't think that deterred away from New England's performance. I thought the Patriots played a very heady game. Are they perfect? No, I don't know anybody who's playing. Honestly, I don't know who anybody is. I think the team that's playing the best on both sides of the ball right now, John, mm-hmm. might be the Cincinnati Bengals. Okay? But I don't know if I've seen any. I mean, listen, we had Seattle and Glendale after week one. Okay?
Yeah, right.
So
right.
What happens if they lose the Super Bowl rematch this week? Okay?
Yeah, good
You'll
point.
Hear it now. Countdown in 3, 2, one. What's wrong with the Seahawks?
Yeah, exactly. They'd be one and two. Early in the program, I kind of divided. It was hard to say, you know, like who's the best top five or top ten or whatever in the NFL. You know, the power rankings that we see that have come out now, because the NFL seems to need to copy what they do in college with a top 20 poll. So I understand the need for lists and polls and things like that. It's very social media friendly, but I kind of divided the NFL into two categories. There's a list of about maybe 6 to 8 teams that right now I think could beat anybody, and everybody else needs work. And until last week, the Patriots were definitely in the needs work category.
Right. Yeah, I can definitely see that. I mean, like I said, I think one thing I don't think people notice about Cincinnati, okay, and listen, they do a great job. They didn't lose a lot of people during free agency, but they lost a little depth. But yeah. They're deep. Mm-hmm. In this league, it's hard to be deep. Cincinnati, so far, has not allowed a sack or committed a turnover in 2 games. Now, it's only 2 games.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a bad way to start the season.
That's a great way to start the season.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's offensive efficiency. In fact, they haven't even fumbled, okay? So, in other words, sometimes a team can fumble 4 times and they recover all of them, and it's not a turnover. They have not allowed a sack or fumbled at all in 2 games. Or thrown an interception. I mean, it's a nice way to start the season. They've beaten a divisional foe on the road in Baltimore, and then came home and really did a number on the Atlanta Falcons, despite losing arguably their best offensive player.
Sure, sure. And that's why I had Cincinnati in that first category rather than the second one. The other question that I kind of threw out to our fans here was, you know, considering all of the troubles that the Raiders have had and off to an 0-2 start, and here's one more thing I didn't even add into the equation, but we were talking about, you know, how, you know, rumors continue to persist that this team could actually be on the lookout for another landing spot, whether it's L.A. or we even heard San Antonio in the offseason. There are, you know, lots of things that are out there. But part of the reason that Oakland is perceived the way they are is because they're dead last in NFL local television ratings. Last. 9% of the audience. 9% of the audience puts them 32nd in NFL local TV ratings. Now,
Should we change your nickname to the Silver and Blackout?
Yeah, well, that's exactly. Very good, by the way. That's very clever. How do you come up with this stuff so quickly?
Ask my mom. God bless her soul. She left me a while ago, but I remember one time having lunch with her, and she said, I said something to the waiter, and she just looked at me. She goes, "You're just compelled to make a comment, are you?" I said, "I blame you. You're the, you know." And my, you know, hey, it's all in good fun and so on. But I mean, going back to 2003.
Yeah.
The Oakland Raiders are 53-125.
Right.
They've lost 125 games
right.
in a little over 11 years.
Right.
I mean, that is a staggering total for a team that was in, you know, a Super Bowl in the 60s, a Super Bowl in the 70s, 2 in the 80s, okay, one in 2002, okay? I mean, this is not a franchise without success. But talking about falling and falling hard, it's almost like that when the Niners fell for a while. Or, you know, some people make the cause. I can't put the Cowboys in that same cause because they're just 8-8 and 8-8 and 8-8 and 8-8. And, of course, they're 1-1 this year.
Right.
But, I mean, the Raiders haven't even had a winning season since 2002.
That's shocking to think about. But it's true. It's true.
Yeah. And off to a horrible start. And, listen, if New England wants to work on the running game, they picked a good week to do it. They gave up 212 to the Jets in week one. And, of course, they got a whole lot better last week against the Houston Texans. They only gave up 188.
Wow. All right, let's start it off then. We'll come back and finish up with the Patriots and Raiders again. But tonight,
and hopefully, by the time we get back to the Raiders segment, they'll still be in.
They'll still be in Oakland. That's exactly good one. I like that silver and blackout. I might have to borrow that, Russell.
Oh, you can borrow it, and you'll get my bill.
Okay, so. Good. You know what?
You know who to pass it on to. So.
yes, I do.
Give it to Kevin. Give it to Kevin. Kevin, we actually used to use coins and paper money in our day.
So. I don't even have any coins or paper money on me right now.
Yeah, you got to remember he works for the Patriots. Oh!
You said it, not me.
It sometimes works like that around here. All right, Thursday night football as we move along here. The Bucs at the Falcons. I can't believe Tampa Bay 0-2, both of them at home, but they're both at home. You know, wow, this is a season that could go south really, really fast for Lovie Smith.
Yeah, no pun intended either. I mean, this is a team that's already finished dead last in the division 3 years in a row, comes off a 4-12 year, as did Atlanta. But I think their expectations were incredibly high because of the money they spent, the way they drafted, even as much as the Logan Mankins deal, you know, about 3 weeks ago, I guess now. But their defense hasn't played bad. But offensively, I don't know what everybody was expecting from Josh McCown. I know he threw, one interception last year in limited duty. So far, 2 touchdowns, 3 picks. 2 fumbles. He didn't lose either one of them, but he fumbled twice and sacked, I think, 4 times.
Mm-hmm.
Erratic, to say the least, has been the offense. Now, Doug Martin didn't play last week, might not play again tonight. You know, speaking of, you were kidding about the Celtics, you know, 6'5 Vincent Jackson, 6'5 Mike Evans. The rookie tight end, Austin Seferian Jenkins, is out. He's 6'5. Mm-hmm. So Brandon Myers will start again. But this is a tough call. Now, I will say this about Atlanta's defense, which has been kind of dreadful, and played 2 pretty good teams to begin with. But the Falcons have been looking for a pass rush for the last couple of years. You remember, they did, you know, the whole thing with John Abraham, and then, of course, Umanura. And what they had coming into the season, they only had 61 sacks in their last 2 seasons. So 61 sacks in 32 games, John.
Wow.
Make that 61 sacks in 34 games. They don't have a sack yet this year.
Okay. Yeah.
Sacks aren't everything.
Yeah.
But this is a team that I think Atlanta wins comfortably because I think they're going to come out and throw the football. And Tampa's pass rush isn't overpowering as well. But I think they'll put Josh McCown in a position where he's too far behind to rely on the running game. It's just what Atlanta has to do right now. But this is a huge game for Atlanta as well, because if they're going to make a run in the division, and listen, I give them the benefit of the doubt. They, you know, 5 straight winning seasons, four times in the playoffs of the last 5 years. I think last year was an anomaly.
Yeah, I do too.
Okay?
I do too.
Rebound, but they can't afford to fall too far behind Carolina. And you certainly don't want to lose a divisional game at home.
No, you don't. And I think, honestly, Russell, Atlanta was the team that I really thought stood poised to be the biggest bounce back from a year ago, because I did think that. I thought that was an anomaly for them last year. Part of the reason why I actually paid attention to, the HBO series, Hard Knocks, because the Falcons were the team this year. And I thought, you know, this will probably be insightful, because this is a franchise that has good talent, is used to winning, and they really stubbed their toe badly last year. And I actually was not disappointed.
Well, you know, it's funny. It'll be interesting to see how the season pans out. If you remember how last year started, the team that has baffled them since Drew Brees got there are the Saints. And they're beating New Orleans 10-0 at the Superdome last year after the first quarter. And then the next 63 quarters were a nightmare.
Yeah.
Wound up blowing that game. They wound up blowing a bunch of games. They lost to New England, I think, on a Monday night. or Sunday night, I should say. They lost to the Jets. They blew the Jets game. I think that was on a Monday night. They kept finding ways to lose. They kept finding ways to blow leads. Then the injuries came. They couldn't run. They couldn't stop the run. And listen, we saw three teams last year who won division titles, Houston, Atlanta, and Washington. You know, two of them finished dead last, and the Falcons were tied for last, although technically they finished third. So doesn't take long to flip-flop. You know, just ask the Houston Texans, who were 2-0 again, as far as Gump would say.
Yeah.
By the way, Houston 2-0 for the fifth straight year.
Yeah. You forget that they lost what they did in a row last year.
Yeah. I mean, 2-0 was... I don't know many teams, John, that hit the wall at 2-0. But they did.
Yeah, they certainly did. In the division, within the Patriots division, game that probably turns out to be an unlikely must-see would be a good one to watch this weekend. Chargers at the 2-0 Buffalo Bills. Who'd have thunk that? And yeah, I'm frankly surprised the Chargers are 1-1, especially with the one win being how they got it last week.
Well, it's funny. Because I thought they had a very good chance of beating Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
Week, and they let that one get away.
Yep.
And speaking of not letting one get away, 42 minutes and 15 seconds of possession time.
That's awesome.
The Seahawks last week. The Seattle Seahawks ran 40 plays. The Chargers ran 75.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Okay? So, listen, there's one way to beat a team is not let them have the football. Now, sometimes, you know, you think about the Super Bowl last year, Seattle didn't have to have the football to score points. You know, they watched one ball go sailing over Peyton Manning's head. You know, they forced four turnovers. Malcolm Smith took an interception back. So, I mean, Seattle has a lot of different ways, but they look confounded, and they got out-Seattled last week by San Diego. Meanwhile, Buffalo wins a divisional game at home and does it with one offensive touchdown. You know, Sammy Watkins touchdown, C.J. Spiller with a kickoff return. Boy, is he a dynamite player in every phase. Five field goals. And Buffalo's offense has not been electrifying. At least, I want to say their offensive unit has only scored three touchdowns in two games.
Right.
But they're 2-0, and I think they're starting to make Orchard Park a tough place to play again. Listen, we saw Buffalo get off to a great start 3 years ago, and then it all kind of came apart.
That's correct.
But this is kind of a different, feeling, and so far, listen, going into Chicago and doing what they did and stealing that one in overtime might have been a real confidence booster for the entire team.
I certainly give them more than just a puncher's chance this week at home against San Diego, although I think I still like San Diego a little bit, and the reason I do is because I think the Bills still have something that they got to show us all.
Well, I agree. Buffalo's trying to be a little bit like San Diego. A lot of teams are trying to actually be like San Diego with that running game, and listen, I thought one of the best free agent moves made this offseason was San Diego signing Donald Brown, who really pushed himself last year and finally looked like a first-round draft choice last season.
Right.
And with Ryan Matthews' propensity for getting hurt, now Ryan Matthews had a career year last year, but of course he got hurt already this year, and now Donald Brown can come in and play that tough, hard-nosed role in the running back, and I don't think they'll necessarily miss a beat. You know, they still have Woodhead, they have the other components. I guess Antonio Gates still has a little swing in his step.
Yeah.
90 touchdown receptions in his career now.
Yeah. I mean, he looks rejuvenated. Rare. Yeah, he definitely looks rejuvenated.
Right. So, I mean, San Diego, I felt, was the team that could challenge Denver in the West because of their style. And, maybe they kicked themselves a little for letting the Arizona game get away from them a little. They wound up holding Arizona 18 points, okay? Mm-hmm. Everything kind of came apart in the fourth quarter, but that was a big bounce back for them. And also, you know, we don't put a lot into preseason and stuff, but I think people will remember that San Diego went up to Seattle this summer and got waylaid.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes that can be a little bit of a call as well. Not again, you don't really look for the results in a preseason game, but you look at the way the game's played, and if you remember that night, San Diego looked completely baffled. And yet they, you know, a couple months, you know, a month later, they came back and get a team that everybody already had pegged at 16-0.
Right. The other two divisional foes are both at home. So everybody in the AFC East has got a home game this week. Dolphins are at home against the 0-2 Kansas City Chiefs, and then the Jets get Monday night against the 1-1 Chicago Bears, and a Chicago team that was truly impressive, I thought, winning on the road as they did and spoiling the debut of Levi's Stadium in San Francisco.
Yeah, would you say that the Niners got caught with their pants down?
Yeah. Yeah, yes, definitely.
I don't think it was a super shock to Chicago one. The way they did it and coming back the way they did was pretty impressive. And Colin Kaepernick, there's something about Sunday Night Football that doesn't agree with Colin Kaepernick. Four turnovers the other night. They wind up blowing, in essence, what turned out to be a 17-0 second quarter lead and a 20-7 fourth quarter lead. And it's funny because we all like to look at schedules at the beginning of the year and try to do the whole forecasting.
Yeah.
I'm sure a lot of people didn't expect the Bears to lose to the Bills at home. And then again, probably a lot of people didn't expect the Bears to beat the Niners in San Francisco, but that's exactly what they did.
Right.
And they're sitting here 1-1. And this will be a very, very interesting game with the Jets. I think Geno Smith has certainly made strides. I think defensively the Jets really challenge you. It'll be interesting if the Jets get the running game going, if Chicago can hold up, because their run defense doesn't look that much better, if it is at all, from a year ago. But I think the one thing that everybody's going to be watching in this game more than anything else is how many timeouts the Jets have left.
Oh, you know, I honest to goodness, when I saw that happen, and I was watching the game when that happened last week, and I just said, oh yes, this is so good. More fodder for the cannon. I could not believe it. I want the Jets to stay just as they are. I don't want Rex Ryan to lose his job. I don't want anybody to go anywhere. I was kind of sad to see Sanchez go, but Geno Smith can be just as good a punching bag as anybody else. Looking at it from a Patriots perspective, I mean, these guys can't get out of their own way. It really is. It does make things very interesting. The scary part here will be when the Jets finally figure it all out.
Well, the thing that is interesting, and it's funny how we get, we get on one topic, and it kind of deflects the other topic, because all anybody wanted to talk about was that timeout, as you well know, John.
Sure, that's right.
But they did blow an 18-point lead.
They did.
They buried.
Yeah, that's very.
You watched them play early in the game. They were very. Listen, I know this isn't the fearsome foursome. When it comes to the Green Bay Packers defense, they've had a lot of defensive issues. They've given up 60 points in two games, and not much better than they were a year ago. But the fact that the Jets let them in with the defense that they have, and I know they have issues at cornerback, I understand all that, but an 18-point lead is an 18-point lead, and the fact that they squandered that, that's far more concerning than somebody calling timeout accidentally.
Correct. Correct. They had that one lost, I think. Clearly, they had that one lost a long time before it actually happened, without a doubt.
Well, and this is what made, listen, this first 2 weeks of the season, we already mentioned, it's been the brief, but year of the comeback after 2 weeks. And think about perception just last week. If you're watching the Jet game, they're up by 18, and then you shut it off, you don't know what happened. If you're watching the Bears game, and they're down 17... you shut it off and you didn't know what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Were you surprised when you woke up Monday morning?
Yeah, no kidding. Very surprised. There is, of course, a huge game that I'm sure most of the National Football League will be pointed toward on Sunday afternoon. It just so happens to be the Super Bowl rematch between Denver and Seattle, and the game being played in Seattle. And I mentioned this earlier on the program today, and I think it'll draw a fair amount of attention, and it should. I'll look forward to watching it myself once I'm done here at Gillette. But the fact of the matter is that what will we really know if Denver wins this game? And what will we really know if Seattle wins this game? Because it's so early in the season. Clearly, these are still two of the best teams in the NFL. But does a game like this help or hurt, you know, title contenders like this when it's played early in the season?
I just think it's a fun game. Listen, the bottom line, and remember, it's an interconference game.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing to keep in mind for Seattle, and this, you know, there's nothing they can do about this, but Seattle's season is really going to be made down the stretch, John. They play five of their last six within the division. And they don't see the Niners until Thanksgiving night.
Right.
And then they play them twice in 3 weeks. So, you know, whoever they play around, I'm not saying they don't need to win these games and so on, but getting out of the NFC West is going to be obviously the key. Getting out of the AFC West is going to be the key for Denver. And they held on last week against an undermanned Kansas City team who came into Mile High, and you know, I still call it Mile High, and damn near pulled that game out. So, I mean, I think there's concern parts. By the way, it might surprise people to know that this is only the sixth time that two teams who played in the Super Bowl the previous year meet in the regular season the following year.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't happen that often. In fact, the last time it happened, it involved the New England Patriots and the Green Bay Packers in 1997, the year after they played in Super Bowl 31. So it's been 17 years, basically.
Wow, 17 years.
Yeah, but I mean, only six times in 48 years. That's funny enough, the very first time it happened, Kansas City and Minnesota played in the last game played by an AFL team because it was Super Bowl IV and the merger on the field took place.
Mm-hmm.
Then the following year, Kansas City visited Metropolitan Stadium when the Vikings used to play outdoors all the time. And there's no, you know, like I said, it doesn't happen that often. So it's kind of a neat thing, and it's funny. Denver and Seattle, for two teams that used to be in their own division, and then now they're not even in the same conference, but they play regularly in the preseason. They've seen a lot of each other. Is it going to be? I mean, you know, they played in the Super Bowl in February. They played this summer in Denver, and now they're about to play this September in the regular season. So I don't even know how many, you know, surprises there's going to be between the teams and so on. But I'm kind of leaning Denver here. I just think Denver, I think it's going to be a low-scoring game, and I'm not sure what I'm seeing out of Seattle's offense last week. I'm always curious to see how a good team responds after a loss, okay?
Yeah.
And it's been a while since Seattle's lost two in a row. But Denver is usually a very good early-season team, regardless of who's playing quarterback. And Peyton's usually a very good early season quarterback, as we've seen. By the way, Peyton Manning, six touchdown passes, five to tight ends and one to a wide receiver so far in two games. But the one thing that had to leave you scratching your head a little from last week's San Diego game was Seattle's inability to stop the run. And you saw that occasionally last year, but you've seen it more than occasionally this year. Even in the game where they routed Green Bay, Eddie Lacy had his share of success before the game got out of hand.
Right. Okay. All right, well, this brings us full circle back to the Patriots and the Raiders, which we started to talk about. And, you know, it's almost too easy. It's almost kind of silly to think, okay, well, you know, this is the Patriots' home opener. You know, it's kind of unusual that they started the season with two road games. You don't really see that all that often. You're more likely to see two home games, and it turned out pretty badly for the Bucs this year, as we talked about earlier. But the Patriots did split. They're 1-1. They get the home game, and they have a home game against one of the teams that right now is just not very strong. And a lot of that has to do with the revolving door that they've had in the coaching ranks and certainly in the quarterback ranks. I made the comparison earlier, Russell, and I'm sure you've seen this week. But since the Snow Bowl game between the Patriots and the Raiders, the most infamous game really of them all, although you probably could go back to 1976 to find one that's pretty close, 76-77.
Game was a great playoff game.
Yeah, yeah. There's no question it was. And that does stick with old-time Patriot fans for a long time and absolutely. For a lot of reasons, as I'm sure you're...
Absolutely. But as far as a football game, it was a great football game.
Yes, it was back and forth, hard hitting. It was everything. And there are so many that feel like that Patriots team may have been, short of, you know, some of the Super Bowl champs, anyway, the best Patriots team of all time. Certainly one of the best that didn't win, although I would argue that 07 was a pretty good team that didn't win either, ultimately. Getting to the point, though, Oakland is traveling in a completely opposite direction from the Snow Bowl. since the Patriots have, and a lot of that has been because of the turnstile upstairs. They've had 7 different head coaches in that time since the snowball and 18 different starting quarterbacks. And, of course, the Patriots get a chance to look at a rookie, and they have good success traditionally under Bill Belichick against rookie quarterbacks the first time they face them. So Oakland's problems seem compounded. So rather than say, how bad do you think the Patriots could win this game, how does Oakland win this game?
Well,
is it even possible?
Well, I think it's, listen, it's always possible, and it's always possible the Patriots commit 6 or 7 turnovers.
Yes, that's true.
In the game.
That's true.
But there's not anything that Oakland is doing well so far. Even last week when they had over 100 yards rushing, Derek Carr had 58 of them, and 41 of those came, I think, on a 1 scramble by him. So, and the fact that they've given up 400 yards rushing in 2 games. I mean, they went out and got a lot of defensive help, but guys like Justin Tuck and Lamar Woodley are more pass rushers than they are run stoppers.
Right.
So they're running into the same old problem. You know, they barely had the ball when they played against the Jets. Last week, Arian Foster had, I want to say, 38 carries?
Yes.
Or, that doesn't sound right. I mean, close to 30, somewhere in it. So I have to go back and look at the number, but I know Arian Foster has 55 carries in 2 games.
He does.
He carried it a lot against.
He had 28 carries last week for 138.
28 last week,
yeah,
means that he had 27 the week before. That's Arian Foster type football,
right?
And what's disturbing with that is the Raiders know the run's coming and they can't stop it,
mm-hmm.
and they'll get a heavy dose of that this week. I don't think there's any question about it. And you know, listen, I know they don't take a bus or drive a car. But here comes the Raiders making a second East Coast trip in 3 weeks.
Yeah, so. Boy, that's awful. And actually, I'm very sympathetic to that. Starting out on the East Coast, going back home, and then coming back east, and then they got to go further east next week and play in London.
Yeah, there you go. And then I'm sure they will sleep for a week.
Yeah.
During their bye week.
Yeah.
But, you know, not much has changed apparently with the Raiders, unfortunately, and I think the Pats, at least for a couple of weeks, are going to use that second half collapse in Miami as a lot of impetus to do what they want to do. I just can't see the Raiders doing much anything well against this New England team. That's the problem. For lack of a better word, New England might not be on its game right now, but I can't think of one aspect of the Raiders game that is particularly playing well. And I think that leaves them, you know, in a near hopeless situation this week. And, you know, listen, you talk about the contrast since the Tucker Rule game and so on. It's amazing to me, you know, the Pats since 2003 have won at least 10 or more games every year. The Raiders since 2003 haven't had a winning season.
Pretty amazing, isn't it?
The contrast is unbelievable. And I just don't see it being a good day. I don't see anything redeeming that the Raiders are doing right now. And it's a shame, too. You know, they hung in there with the Jets, but they were hopelessly outgained in that. I want to say it was like 402 to 158.
Yeah, it was bad.
In terms of total yards.
Right, it was bad.
Okay, last week, you know, you got Arian Foster controlling the football against them. It's more than just a rookie quarterback. They made changes on the offensive line. The running game is, like I said, you know, Derek Carr was the running game last week. They had 25 yards rushing against the Jets.
Right.
Oh, I mean, we're just not seeing anything. And, you know, if it adds up to another 4-12, I have a funny feeling that coaching number you gave is going to change.
Again.
Again.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at somewhere like New England 30-14.
Yeah. Kind of the way that I'm looking as well. Good stuff as always, my man. Thank you so much for spending the time with us. And we look forward again to next Thursday. It's always great.
I appreciate it. And tell Kevin next week, if it makes him feel better, I'll call him on the rotary phone to do this segment.
Rotary phone. Nice. Does Kevin even understand what a rotary phone might be?
Is that the one you put your finger in it and you spin the numbers?
Very good, Kev. Very good. Hey. I like that. That's good.
Hey, you must have been valedictorian that day.
It's better than carrier pigeon.
Ooh. which we also have some practical experience with. Is that what you're alluding to?
We could have two tin cans and a wire string.
That's my favorite mode of communication, by the way.
Yeah, but I used to use up too many minutes when I had that. So.
I love it. That's exactly right. All right, Russell, talk to you next week. Have a great week. Enjoy the games this weekend.
You got it, John.
Thanks. Russell Baxter, profootballguru.com. Find his stuff as well on Cold Hard Football Facts, on Bleacher Report, just about everywhere that there's really serious stuff on the internet about the NFL, you're going to find Russell Baxter. All right, we got a ton of emails to get to. I'm going to try to do that as well. Let me finish up with a couple of Facebook posts to get in your score predictions for Prediction Thursday as it rolls along here. Webradio at patriots.com, 855-PATS. 500, the toll-free number, at JR Broadcaster on Twitter. Got a couple of those I'll get to. John.Rook on Facebook. Herman says, John, I'm writing to you from Waco, Texas, home of your Baylor Bears. Well, they're not my Baylor Bears, but I did work in Waco for a couple of years. It's kind of like saying, hey, I spent a day in Waco 1 year. Or it's been a year in Waco one day. He said, I just want to give you his quick score prediction. I'm thinking 35-17 Pats win. Your Baylor Bears. I can't do that very well. Only one person could ever do that. That was the great Frank Fallon, the original voice of the Baylor Bears. John Morris is a friend of mine, is the voice of the Baylor Bears now, but Frank Fallon was one of my true mentors in this business and one of the great college voices of all time and a superb announcer and instructor at Baylor. Adam says on Facebook, he says, prediction for the game, Patriots 34-10. Hoping the Pats don't take this Raiders team for granted. They still have some talented playmakers on defense that can make Brady's day abysmal. I'm not worried about the Pats' defense, but I am still worried about the issues on the O-line. I'm an optimist, however, and I have faith that they will continue to improve. Adam in San Antonio on that one. Good. Onique says, John, great show as always. This is my first time writing in. I have a Pats-Raiders score prediction. Pats 44, Raiders 7. A pick 6, 3 picks, and another Chandler Jones block field goal would be awesome. Thank you. Yeah, I think it'd be awesome too, Onique. Thank you. Great to hear from you. Scott on Facebook. John, love the show. This week will finally show us fans that the offense is well-rounded with multiple receiver contributions. And he says 38-14 Pats. Okay. Let's see. All right. Let's get back now to, let me get to Twitter. I promised a couple of tweets that were there. Eric on Twitter says Pats win 41-13. Gronk gets back in the end zone after not getting in last week. Let's see. What else? Matt says, Patriots 31, Raiders 6. Kev, love this one. John, love the show. The Texas State Fair is now on our bucket list, thanks to you. That's great! And he says, Pats 45, Oakland 13. And this is Kev from Suffolk, England. Oh, we got a UK Pat that needs to make the Texas State Fair and get to the Fletcher's Corny Dogs. Oh, yeah. Now, Kev, I would also ask you, in addition to the Corny Dog, which we've raved about here on this program in the past, I would also ask you, what other fried food, what other fried, deep-fried southern delicacy that you would be looking forward to tasting, sir? There's nothing better than chicken fried steak when it's deep-fried. It's just not. Although I would say this, that the deep-fried Twinkies, it's pretty good. Deep-fried Twinkies, that's a personal favorite. I've only had them once. I'm a little scared as to what happens if I try to actually eat one again, because it just may all end right there, right there on the Texas State Fairgrounds. Mark on Twitter says, John, by far the worst team in the NFL this season is the Giants. They are pathetic. Giants fans will probably agree with you, Mark. And he says, Pats win 38-17 this weekend. 38-17. Robert on Twitter. Prediction Thursday. Raiders 26, Patriots 24. Whoa! How about that? Robert, are you a Raiders fan? It's okay if you are. Really. Seriously. It's fine. I think it's great. But, wow. He is stepping out on a limb here. I mean, last week I think we had actually, even after the loss to Miami, as disappointing as that was, we only had one person pick Minnesota to win the game last week. And, of course, it came before Adrian Peterson's suspension. So I can understand maybe why that would have happened. But still, it just shows you the confidence that Patriot Nation and those that listen to this program specifically have in the football team to bounce back. But Robert sees a much different picture. Raiders 26, Patriots 24. Wow. Okay. We will certainly mark that one. And then PMD 31 says 45-6 Pats over the Raiders. Hashtag blowout. Fair enough. I thought I had a couple of other ones here. Not yet on Twitter. All right. So there's still a chance to get him in if you want to fire him in on Twitter. At JR Broadcaster is the Twitter address. And again, even if it's you're listening to us in podcast form after we're done on the air, as long as you can get me the tweet before kickoff on Sunday, you'd still go down as a correct answer if you get the right score and win yourself a yearbook. All right. On email. Steve and Killeen, before he blew up my email system here. Time to be bold. Pats 42, Raiders 12. I just believe the Raiders are that bad, and the Patriots continue to improve. Patrick. John, my official score, prediction, Patriots 38-14. Second time we've had that score. This is Pat in Agawam, Mass. Brady passes for over 300 yards and three TDs. They get the play-action passing game going. Defense causes three more turnovers. Oakland gets a garbage-time TD, and I still think Jacksonville has the slight edge over Oakland as the worst team in the league. Kevin from Munich, Germany. Great to have you back on the air. It's been a long time. Thank you, Kevin. Glad for you to participate. After seeing the offense struggle through the first two games of the year, I'm really close to panicking. I can understand Bill wants to build for the future, but someday he has to realize that he treats Tom Brady unfairly. I'd love to see him pulling off a trade before the deadline for a veteran-proven wideout, even though it's highly unlikely. I know they ran mostly heavy package against the Vikings, but the passing numbers are pedestrian. Edelman isn't going to last long if he's the focal point of the offense. And that is a good point, Kevin. That is definitely a good point. He says, my score prediction, Sunday's game, 34-10 Pats. At least one defensive score, two picks. Glenn in Ottawa, Ontario. John, my prediction's 42-7 Patriots all the way, baby. Howard in Stratford, Connecticut. Pats 38, Raiders 10. Pats need to continue to show improvement. It's a tie between the Raiders and the Jaguars for worst team in the NFL. Bad ownership, poor football operations management, hiring has led them both where they are today. If the Patriots went back to their losing ways and refused to invest in the team, well, that would make me mad. Mr. Kraft has built an efficient football organization, which is 180 degrees in opposition to the Sullivans. And by the way, congrats to Gerard Mayo and his wife on their new baby girl, which was the reason he missed practice yesterday. Good to see he has his priorities correct, at least in my opinion. Yes, and that's something we haven't mentioned yet today, but Eric and I surmised yesterday that that is exactly why Gerard Mayo missed yesterday's practice for a non-injury. It was because we knew his wife was pregnant and sure that the due date was upon us, and that is indeed what happened. So congratulations to Mr. and Mrs. Mayo and his family. Michael says, John, I know Revis got a hint. I'm sure he means Revis. Got a pick last week. Do you think he's still capable of locking down the Megatrons of the world, man on man the whole game, and where do you place him in the top cornerbacks in the NFL? You know, I think that's a matchup, Michael, that everybody loved to see, and undoubtedly we will see when Detroit comes to play here in November. Capable? Yes. Can he? Well, let's keep him healthy for the next 2 months, and then we'll find out. Where do I place him in the top cornerbacks? He's still, I think, right now overall in the top 3 to 5. I mean, can you really name 5 guys better than what you think that he is? And again, even if he's surviving on reputation alone, you're probably still going to mention him in the top 5, right? Junior says, do I get mad at the Patriots and why? I'd say absolutely. For the past few years, all of these jokes that BB keeps drafting makes me angry. Just because you draft a late-round QB that'll go into the NFL Hall of Fame doesn't mean that every late-round guy is going to turn out like TB12. Thanks for your time. Love the show. Keep it up. And he says, Patriots 34, Oakland 13. You know, that's probably a really good point, Junior in Indianapolis. If any Patriots fan has a right to get angry, you'd probably get angry over the lack of star power when it comes to comes to the NFL draft. Because they always look for value. They always trade down. They always do the things that, you know, you don't want them to do, but you just know they're going to do. And it's hard to argue because overall, again, as I mentioned early in the program, looking big picture, these guys have had success. But I can see why somebody would be angry over that. I can certainly understand that. Because you're frustrated over what you think is out there. Keep in mind, these are the guys doing the research. Josh in Orlando. I think Amendola and Dobson are in the game plan to step it up this week. My prediction, Pats 35, Raiders 9. They kick 3 field goals. And which a comfy lead should allow Jimmy G to come in at the end of the game. Reasons for Oakland's problem, there's no face to the franchise, be it player or coach. Most fans can't even name 2 players on that team. Bad teams shouldn't draft outside linebacker pick 5 Khalil Mack to build for the future. I actually liked the Khalil Mack pick. Justin Tuck is certainly still a threat, and I think that Patriots fans will recall his prowess when he played with the Giants. I think you also have to pay attention to Lamar Woodley at the other end. There's a Texas X out there corner and Terrell Brown, although I know he's had some problems, but I still like his potential. And, yeah, you've got the ageless one, Charles Woodson, back there playing free safety. There's definitely some potential on the defensive side of the ball. James in Ellensburg, Washington. Good afternoon. Prediction, Patriots 38, Raiders 10. Offense is going to pick it up. Our running game will be good. The defense will have 2 or 3 turnovers. I see a fumble and 2 picks. Thank you, James. Let me see if I can squeeze in a few more. Tom in Bedford. If the Pats win, call it Winner Wednesday and give out one book. If the Pats lose, call it Whiner Wednesday. Oh, we're talking about already what we should hashtag next Wednesday's show for. All right, Tom in Bedford. That's a great prediction. That's actually a pretty good suggestion. I like the Whiner Wednesday. That's actually not bad. Hashtag Whiner Wednesday. We'll revisit this next week. Tim in San Francisco. 34-10, Patriots. Think the Pats offense starts to get it in gear. The running game will continue to evolve with Ridley and Vereen, the two-headed monster behind, while the line starts to take shape. One advantage the Pats have over other teams is they just get better every week. Defensively, we'll dominate the Raiders and hold them to 10 points. This is Tirth in Vancouver, Canada. My prediction, Raiders-Pats, 41-0. Patriots win. We see a dominant defense we haven't seen since the 03-04 dynasty years. Offense improves a little against a poor, very old Raider defense, but gets help in scoring and field position with the defense and special teams. Gabe in Newtown, Pennsylvania. Bounce back for the offense this week. More Brady-like. Pats 34, Raiders 13. Michael. First off, let's be glad we're talking about what John thinks about in the shower and not Andy. No, let's not be glad about any of that. Long-time listener, first-time emailer to the show. Thank you, Michael. My prediction's 37-13 Patriots win. Also, if the Pats moved to the UK, I would be mad. Well, that wasn't what I was asking. I was saying, you know, what would UK Pats fans do in supporting the Patriots if they actually got their own team? Would they continue to support the Pats? Maybe that's a Zen question for those of you in the UK that are listening to this on podcast. You can feel free to tweet me your responses, and we'll save those. Send them to me at JR Broadcaster, and what we'll do is we'll pile those up, and we'll try to use that for the show next week. Seattle Pats fan Garland says, predicting a 37-9 win for the Pats. I think the defense will have a strong showing. I do have to say defense looks much better and explosive with Will Fork out. I know he's a big-bodied run stopper, but he's one-dimensional. I really liked it when Jones, Ninkovich, Easley, and Salinga are on the front line with Hightower playing close to the line. I totally agree with you. I like that, too. Put them in the four-man front. Hightower's also up there. I think that's probably right now our best defense. Good thoughts, Garland. Josh in Seville, Virginia. John, I don't have much time this afternoon. Wanted to email you with a pick. Let you know I just joined Twitter. I'm following you. Thank you, Josh. I think the game will end up 38-20. Patriots. TB 12 rounds back into offensive form. Silvio in San Diego. New England wins in a squeaker. 23-16 with a late fourth quarter touchdown. Thank you, Silvio. It's one of the few close ones we've had. We did have one Raider prediction for a win on Twitter today. Jeff in Calgary. John, I'll have to catch up with the podcast later. I was stupid enough to register for a class at the same time as your show. Really, Jeff, what the hell were you thinking? I'll go with the Patriots 27-17, expecting a lot of Ridley to be in the game plan as long as he continues to hold on to the football. That's for sure. Gabe says, I just wanted to mention, I still remember that 76 game. We gave Oakland their only loss earlier that year, which was a 48-17 thumping, and that ghost roughing call on Sugar Bear that I believe would have been the Pats' first Super Bowl win, could have been, because they were that good. They had almost 3,000 yards rushing. Steve Grogan had 12 rushing touchdowns that year. Stood for a long time until Cam Newton broke it a couple of years ago. 50 takeaways that year defensively, so many other accolades. Those were some great battles, although this one may be more one-sided. I'm just glad it's not in the black hole. Agreed. I made my first visit to the black hole this last year, albeit it was for an Oakland A's baseball game, but I saw where they put the black hole there in the O.com Stadium, or O.co Stadium, whatever they call it now. I was not impressed. I mean, I guess I can understand why it could be, you know, pretty much as you suggested, a black hole and a rough place to be if it's a football environment there. But, you know, I guess maybe just because you're not overwhelmed. In fact, you're vastly underwhelmed by the stadium. And I was kind of like, wow, that's all there is? Really? That's it? That's what it is? That's where it is? I was a little disappointed. Brandon says, oh, I see. Okay, that's a. If you're gonna send stuff to the fantasy guys and they're coming up here in about 3 or 4 minutes, make sure your email says for the fantasy show, because sometimes they get destroyed here on email and then your question doesn't get asked. Adam, Pat's 34-14. Brady's gonna spread the ball around. Dobson will have 3 receptions for 40 yards and a touchdown. Arlene, in Florida. Ormond by the Sea, Florida. Hi, this is going to be a great week for the Patriots. 42-14, she says, over the Raiders. I think I got one more here on Facebook that I'll share. Tyler says, I'm feeling 30-13, Pats, for this one. That's Tyler from Georgia. And JQ says, John, love the show. You the man. Thank you, JQ. It speeds up my work day. Thank you for that. My prediction's 38-14. Keep up the good work. Patriots, 38-14. That seems to be the common thread at 38-14. If 38-14 ends up the score, Kevin, I think we give away about 4 books this week, right? Because I think we got that many. All right. I'm going to wrap up the show today. First of all, by giving you my score before we get off to our fantasy fellas. I had to kind of admit, I really stayed blank with this all week long because I knew that I was going to pick the Patriots to win the game. I really didn't think there was going to be a way that the Patriots are going to lose the game. All things coming in. This is just a tough situation to put Oakland in, having to travel east 2 out of the first 3 weeks and then continue on this 11-day road trip. It's going to see them go on to London after this. Rookie quarterback, and traditionally Bill Belichick does real well game planning against rookie quarterbacks the first time that he faces them. Patriots got back into gear last week defensively against Minnesota, albeit against a less than 100% Minnesota team. But I think you're also going to see that somewhat with Oakland on offense. My concern here is, of course, if the Patriots shoot themselves in the foot with their own mistakes. So far, they're second in the NFL in the giveaway-takeaway ratio. They're +5 through the first 2 weeks of the season. That's a good trend that will need to continue. If they can get a couple of picks, force a fumble or two, stay on the plus side, not shoot themselves in the foot. And the main thing here is, people, penalties. Patriots are second in the league in penalties after 2 weeks. They've had 24 penalties for over 260 yards in penalty yards. That can't happen if you're going to be a contending team. That's the nitpick that we led with on Tuesday that we talked about in our View from Above column here on Patriots.com this week. That's the problem. They've got to fix that. I would like to see, last week you had 15 penalties for 163 yards. Can we cut that in half? Can we make that a reasonable goal this week? Cut the penalties in half to say 7 penalties for 75 yards. Now, under most circumstances, I think that's probably also too much. But that would certainly be a step in the right direction. I'm sure the coaching staff and the players themselves are going to ask for more than that. But if you get it back to seven plays, seven penalties, 75 yards, and you can end up on the plus side on the giveaway takeaway, I see the Patriots winning this game, and I see them winning it big, and I'm going to go with 37-16. 37-16 Patriots. And I do think that the turnovers will probably pump up the score a little bit late. But I'm, you know, the spread is what, 14, 15 points? I'd be a little disappointed in the Patriots if they didn't cover that this week, considering it's the home opener as well. All right, that's going to do it for our time in the program today. Thanks to Kevin. Thanks to our pro football guru, Russell Baxter. Thanks to you for all the cards and letters and the phone calls today. It's always great to hear from you. Keep them coming. And just remember, even though we're not here on Fridays, Patriot Friday programming from WEEI here in Boston will, takes over on Mondays and Fridays here on Patriots.com radio. But even though we're not around, you know, continue to tweet. Send us a Facebook post. I'll see it over the weekend. And then, of course, we can start it right back up again the first part of next week. And then we'll nitpick it all next Tuesday on hashtag Nitpick Tuesday. Enjoy the games this week, everyone.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
Pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program.
Ron Jaworski,
Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook.
Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2.